Good afternoon and welcome to Stage Talk, a weekly conversation about local theater. I'm Stephen Hunt.
And I'm Jean Paul, and today we're going to be talking about Anchorage Opera's upcoming production of Tosca.
And to talk about it, we have Anchorage Opera's Executive Director, Kevin Patterson. Thank you for joining us, Kevin.
Good afternoon. It's great to be here.
And Tosca is an opera that almost everybody knows anything about, but in case there's some people out there who might like to go who don't know the plot, we're not going to give it. Except to say that this is one of the few operas in which the woman is the turning point, the character that runs the show.
Well, absolutely, Jean Paul. Tosca is the middle opera of a three-opera set by Giacomo Puccini, who many claim to be the heir apparent in the golden age of Italian opera after a man named Giuseppe Verdi, Joe Green, as we say here in America. And so Puccini writes this opera, Tosca, sandwiched in between La Bohème in 1896 and Madame Butterfly in 1904. Tosca is premiered in 1900. And this opera, to your point about Tosca, Floria Tosca, mm-hmm. the main character being the driver in this opera, really changes the operatic landscape from this point forward. And you see it again, you see it with Tosca, and then you see it again only 4 years later with Cho-Cho-San and Madame Butterfly, in which the heroine is the driving factor in the opera. Essentially, at its premiere, Tosca was known as that shabby little shocker. It is not a piece that has a lot of arias in it. It's not a piece that has a lot of wonderful tunes in it, although it has some glorious moments. Mm-hmm. It has probably two of the most famous arias in operatic history. Vici d'arte, which is sung by Tosca in the second act, and Cavaradossi's aria arioso, because unlike most operas up until the time of Tosca, the tenor and the soprano and the baritone and the mezzo, usually each of them always had an aria in the opera. And in Tosca, we go all the way through the entire opera, and it's not until the third act when the tenor actually has his moment in the sun. And even then, it's not a full-blown aria, but it is the beautiful and haunting E lucevan le stelle, and the stars were shining. It really set the tone for operas coming after it through the first half of the 20th century.
I've always loved Tosca, and I'm really glad you're doing it. But in case there are anybody out here who would really like to go see this opera, I'm not going to tell you how it ends.
Well, you know, Tosca is the perfect introductory opera, and for several reasons. One, it's three very short acts. It's about 40 minutes in the first act. You get a little intermission. You get about a 40-minute second act, another little intermission, and then 36 or 38 minutes in the third act. And every minute of each act drives you forward. The story is constantly moving you forward. The characters are engaging. You have very visceral feelings about these characters when you come out of this opera. I mean, Scarpia is the embodiment of evil. And at the end of Act One, when he declaims against the chorus who's singing this big Te Deum, this celebratory Te Deum, he, you know, screams out, "Tosca, you make me forget God." You know that this man is the embodiment of evil. And then you have the romance that is the romance between Floria Tosca and Cavaradossi. And you get those tender moments in the first act and in the second act as well, right up until the climax, which, you know, we won't tell you how it ends. But suffice to say, it's not an opera unless somebody dies.
That's a new phrase we should put into our language. It's not an opera until someone dies.
Exactly.
We don't want to give away the surprise ending, but give us a setup for the beginning of the opera. What are audience members going to experience when the story begins? What are they going to be seeing?
Well, you know, it's interesting in that while the first few notes of Tosca are extremely powerful, I think they start off with two quarter notes and this big long half note. Bum, 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 wah. And then all of a sudden it pulls back and you get the first act is a church. The nice thing about Tosca, or the cool thing about Tosca, is You can actually go to Italy today and go to the exact places in Rome in which the opera takes place. So Act One is in a church and in a chapel, the chapel of the Antavanti, the Marchesa Antavanti, which you can see in Rome. Then Act Two is the Palazzo Farnese, the Farnese Palace. And there are pictures on the web, and you can actually go and stand in one of the rooms in which the second act may have been set in. And then the third act is set at the Castel Sant'Angelo, which not only has become famous in Tosca, but if you are a Dan Brown fan, I think in either Angels and Demons or the other one that he wrote, that castle plays very prominently in the story. So from those opening chords, we are grounded very much in 1800 June, and the entire opera takes place in one 24-hour period, very, very compact. And we start off with the sacristan, and he starts off sweeping the floors. And the piece moves on very quickly from there. So it's a piece, again, very compact. It's a melodrama. And it drives you through to that final climax.
I hope that makes a lot of people want to hear it, because it's a wonderful opera. It's one of my favorites. And it's a really great introductory opera. But now let's talk about what a lot of people are talking to me about, is the change in the third opera of the season.
Yes. So for the third opera of the season, we announced to our subscribers and our single ticket buyers that we changed the third opera from My Fair Lady by Lerner and Lowe to Pirates of Penzance by Gilbert and Sullivan. And the reason behind doing that was a situation that arises with some frequency in commercial theater or for-profit theater. But doesn't arise in the nonprofit opera world very much. If you think about most of the operas that are performed by opera companies in America, pieces like Tosca and Butterfly and Traviata, well, they're all by composers who have been gone for a long time, and their works are literally in the public domain, which means anyone can perform them. Broadway musicals like Lerner and Lowe and My Fair Lady are governed by rights, and those rights are held by companies that anyone who wishes to produce those shows has to apply to in order to gain permission to put it on the stage. And when you are a nonprofit company like Anchorage Opera, you are oftentimes placed in the situation where when you're doing a Broadway musical, if a for-profit company or a for-profit group of investors, because Broadway, unlike nonprofit theater, Broadway is all produced by investors who invest massive sums of money into these productions. Most of the time, they don't get their investment back for years and years, if ever. But if they want to do a particular musical, in this case, My Fair Lady, they can buy rights exclusivity for a period of time. And by purchasing that exclusivity, it's a pretty hefty fee that they pay, because essentially, by purchasing that exclusivity, they make sure that no one else can do it, and consequently, the licensing company and the estate of, say, Lerner and Lowe don't get the fees from being able to license that. So we were informed back in November that such a professional outfit was interested in and had obtained the exclusive rights to My Fair Lady for a period of time. And so we were not going to be able to produce that show. So fortunately, we were able to scramble very quickly and to bring a new production of Pirates of Penzance to the stage. Pirates is one of those great shows in that it has both an opera legacy and a musical theater legacy. There's a very famous stage production in 1987 by Joe Papp that ran for almost 800 performances on Broadway, won the Tony Award for Best Revival, won the Drama Critics Award, but yet we first came to it in the Opera House. And a little piece of trivia on Pirates of Penzance, it was the only Gilbert and Sullivan operetta to have its premiere in the United States. And funny story behind it, Gilbert and Sullivan was one of the most heavily pirated sets of composer librettists. And so people were constantly ripping off productions, and they didn't receive any money for this, a.k.a. royalties like My Fair Lady. Well, so in order to get away from people ripping them off in Europe, they decided for Pirates of Penzance they would do that in America. So we're going to be putting on a new production, and it hasn't been seen in Anchorage in, I think, about a dozen years, and we're excited to be able to close the season that way.
For those of you who are just joining us, we're talking with Kevin Patterson from the Anchorage Opera, talking about the upcoming production of Tosca, along with some changes they're having in the rest of the season. And Kevin, you sent me some photographs of some renderings of the set for Tosca. Are those ones you'll be using in the show? Because if they are, they're striking renderings of the sets.
Yes, those renderings are from the set designer Anolfo Maldonado. And the cool thing about being an opera company here in Anchorage, Alaska, unlike the companies outside in the lower 48, is that we produce all of our own sets. Most of the time we'll rent our costumes from other companies, but all of the scenery is created here using local artisans based on the designs that we hire from set designers. And Arnolfo has done a couple different designs for us over the years, and we're really excited about this production of Tosca. And I think those designs are very, very striking. And they're so striking, in fact, that they really focus us more away from the ornamentation that you find in a lot of the actual buildings. And they strip all that away so that we're really honed into the story and the characters. And I think that Arnolfo does a brilliant job in that design.
They are quite striking renderings, and I'm sure they'll be very powerful for the audience when they see the production of Tosca, and it draws them into the music and the characters while underscoring, if you will, the feeling of each of the scenes. Mm-hmm. How about the costumes for the show?
The costumes from the show come from Malabar Limited of Toronto. Malabar is a wonderful costume house in Canada that has productions from all over the world that they not only build themselves but also buy from other companies that are looking to move their productions and do other things. So the costumes are very traditional. It is a very traditional Tosca. For those folks who like the tradition of the look of the period, that will very much be evident in these costumes.
So no steampunk Tosca this time?
No steampunk Tosca, no. And Cavaradossi won't ride in on a motorcycle.
Oh, what a shame. I was looking forward to that.
Yeah. Maybe in Anchorage it should be logging chains and Carhartts. I don't know. I'm not sure.
There's a concept.
Who's doing the scenery for or the costumes for Pirates?
The Pirates costumes are actually coming from Theatrix Costumes, and they're also out of Canada, and they are the big Broadway musical house. And the Pirates costumes are part of an original production that came off of Broadway of several years ago. So we're very blessed in that we're able to draw on these types of warehouses, because everyone looks at the scenery for a production and says, wow, you know, that must have cost a lot. But really where the money is in costumes. And the average cost of building any particular costume to a show is between $3,000 and $5,000 per costume. So for us, having the ability to go through costume houses really helps us bring very, very high quality costumes without the cost associated.
Well, it sounds like we have an exciting show coming up with Puccini's Tosca, and also an exciting end of the season show with Pirates of Penzance. So Kevin, thank you very much for being on our show today.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
And now, here's the Stage Talk calendar. And remember, for another calendar or to post your event, go to Datebook 49 on alaskapublic.org. Alaska Theater of Youth is offering classes in acting, opera, and puppeteering beginning January 12th. For information about them, call 907-338-4901 or email admin@alaskatheaterofyouth.org.
At Cyrano's, Freud's Last Session opens tonight and runs through January the 27th. Showtimes are Thursday, Friday, and Saturdays at 7 and Sundays at 3. For tickets and information, call 263-ARTS or go to centertix.net.
Alaska Fine Arts Academy will be holding auditions for their next production, Amy's Attic, on Friday, January 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. and Saturday, January 5th from 12 to 2 p.m. at AFAA in Eagle River. Performances will be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, February 15th through March 2nd. For information, call 694-8909 or go to akfinearts.org.
This upcoming weekend, January 5th and 6th, one of the best well-kept secrets of theater, the Alaska Overnighters, will be held at APU's Grant Hall. Showtimes are 8 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, and no reservations are necessary. Tickets will be available at the door.
Anchorage Community Theater is auditioning for their show At Home with the Clarks on January 6th and 7th at 6 p.m. The show will run March 8th to 31st. Call 344-4713 for more information or go to their website.
Anchorage Opera's production of Puccini's Tosca will be produced the weekend of January 25th with productions Friday and Saturday at 8 and Sunday at 4. The production will be held at the Discovery Theater in the Performing Arts Center. For tickets, go to centertix.net or call 263-ARTS. Well, that's it for this week. If you'd like to download free podcasts of Stage Talk, visit our website at alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening. Until the next time, I'm Stephen Hunt.
And I'm Jean Paul for KSKA.